Good morning, Gary. It's Harmony, and this is your quiz day special.
And Kendrick riding along. Tomorrow's quiz covers Chapter 1, Regulations, and we went through every page you photographed last night.
Here's the plan for this drive. 7 rounds. Accident reporting. Your emergency powers as a dispatcher. Engine failures. Emergency equipment. Oxygen. Passengers, cargo, and security. And we close with the fuel rules at a rapid-fire recap.
Don't chase answer letters today. The quiz shuffles those. Chase the rule and the number inside it. If you know the rule, any letter arrangement falls over.
Round 1. The NTSB Rules, Part 830. When does the government hear from you, and how fast?
2 speeds, Gary. Some things you report immediately, by the most expeditious means available. Everything else rides in a written report within 10 days.
The immediate list is short. An accident, obviously, and a handful of serious incidents.
The one they love to test, a flight control system malfunction. If the airplane's controls fail or misbehave, that is an immediate notification to the nearest NTSB field office.
Not a blown tire, not a bent wingtip, flight control system trouble.
Right, now the definitions, because the quiz hides the answer inside a definition.
Serious injury first.
Serious injury means any injury that requires hospitalization for more than 48 hours, and that hospital stay has to start within 7 days of the injury. 48 and 7, say it back at a red light.
48 hours in the hospital, starting within 7 days.
Also on the serious injury list, broken bones, except simple fractures of fingers, toes, or your nose, severe bleeding, nerve, muscle, or tendon damage, internal organ injury, second or third degree burns or any burns over 5% of the body.
So the trap answer is a simple finger fracture or first degree burn. Those are not serious injuries.
Severe tendon damage is. That's the one your book highlights.
Now substantial damage.
Substantial damage means damage or failure that adversely affects the structural strength, performance, or flight characteristics and would normally require major repair or replacement of the part.
And the traps?
Ground damage to landing gear, wheels, or tires. Dents in wingtips. Damage to rotor or propeller blades. None of that counts as substantial damage for Part 830, even when it's expensive.
So the right answer smells like failure of a component that hurts performance and needs major repair.
Exactly. Next, the paperwork clock. An accident report goes to the NTSB within 10 days of the accident.
And an incident?
Only if the NTSB asks for it. An incident gets a report on request, not automatically. That's a favorite curveball.
If an aircraft is overdue and believed to be in an accident, that report is also due, and the 10-day clock applies.
And who must be notified when an accident with substantial damage happens? The nearest NTSB field office, immediately.
One more from this family. A near mid-air collision.
A near mid-air collision report goes in immediately, by radio or telephone to the nearest FAA air traffic control facility or flight service station, not to law enforcement, not by certified mail next week.
And what's the whole point of the near mid-air reporting program?
Safety data. It feeds information to make the airspace system safer, so pilots and crews are urged to report each incident right away.
2 safety programs live in this section too. ASRS and ASAP plus FOQA. Keep them straight.
ASRS is the Aviation Safety Reporting System. Voluntary, confidential, and non-punitive. The identifying information gets stripped out. That's the de-identification the question asks about.
But 2 things are never protected by ASRS.
Accidents and criminal offenses, those are wholly excluded and get referred out. Everything else is de-identified before it enters the database.
FOQA, Flight Operational Quality Assurance, what's its purpose?
To identify aggregate information for error trends. Airlines share de-identified flight data with the FAA, so national trends pop out. Aggregate is the key word.
And ASAP, the Aviation Safety Action Program?
It encourages employees, pilots, flight attendants, dispatchers, mechanics, to voluntarily report safety information that may point at precursors to accidents, so problems get fixed before the crash, not after.
One stray bird before we leave this round, literally.
Bird strikes. You're urged to report any bird or wildlife strike, and the tool is FAA Form 5200-7. the Wildlife Strike Report form to the FAA.
Round one done. Round two is your round, dispatcher, emergency authority, and the deviation paperwork.
Here's the picture. Weather goes bad, an engine acts up, the pilot and you need to break a rule to keep people safe. The regulations let you deviate in an emergency. The bill comes later, in writing.
Start with, who can declare?
Either the pilot in command or the aircraft dispatcher can declare an emergency for the flight. Then the certificate holder's rules on operational control kick in.
Now the reports, and listen close, because there are two different 10-day clocks and the quiz loves to swap them.
Clock 1. The aircraft dispatcher declares an emergency and a deviation results. That written report goes through the air carrier's operations manager to the FAA administrator within 10 days of the event.
10 days of the event for the dispatcher.
Clock 2. The pilot in command declares the emergency during flight. The pilot's written report goes to the administrator within 10 days after returning to home base, not after the event, after getting home.
So dispatcher, 10 days from the event. Pilot, 10 days after returning home, who actually sends it?
Whoever declared the emergency. The person who declares is the person who files the report. If it was you, Gary, it's your report.
Now the lost contact scenario. You're working a flight, the radio path dies, and you cannot reach the pilot during an emergency.
Then the dispatcher shall take any action considered necessary under the circumstances. You don't wait, you don't phone a committee, you act.
That's the muscle of operational control. Round 3. Engines quit. What happens next?
First scenario. An engine's rotation is stopped in flight. The pilot reports it, as soon as practicable, to the appropriate ground radio station. That means the company's communication channel for the flight.
And the pilot keeps that station informed of the progress of the flight.
Second scenario. A 3-engine or 4-engine airplane, 1-engine shutdown. The pilot may continue to the planned destination if it's considered as safe as landing at the nearest suitable airport. The company's dispatcher approval rides with that.
But a twin?
An airplane with 2 engines, 1 quits, you land at the nearest suitable airport in point of time where a safe landing can be made, no pressing on in a twin.
Notice the wording, nearest suitable airport in point of time, not distance on a map, time.
If more than one engine fails on the bigger airplane, same deal, nearest suitable airport in point of time.
One design question hides in this round, the flight deck check procedure.
Every certificate holder provides an approved flight deck check procedure for each airplane type. Its job is that the flight crew doesn't rely on memory for items to be checked. Emergencies get handled from the procedure, not from recollection.
So if an answer says memorized, it's wrong. The whole point is the opposite of memory.
Round 4. Emergency equipment. This is the biggest round, so we'll go item by item the way the cabin is laid out.
Ground rule 1. Every piece of required emergency equipment must be clearly identified and clearly marked to show its method of operation.
And if the equipment sits in a compartment, that compartment is marked too, so nobody hunts during a fire.
Fire extinguishers. What decides the minimum number of hand extinguishers?
The airplane's passenger seating accommodations. Seating capacity, not how many people happen to be on board today. Capacity decides equipment, tattoo that on the quiz.
Crash axe.
1 crash axe in the cockpit. That's it, 1.
Close. Megaphones.
Same capacity logic. Seating capacity 60 through 99. 1 megaphone, at the most rearward location in the passenger cabin, where a flight attendant can grab it.
100 seats or more?
2 megaphones. 1 installed at the forward end, 1 at the most rearward location, and here's the trap, a 100-seat airplane carrying only 45 people still needs both megaphones, seats, not souls.
Flashlights.
Each crew member, each flight, has a flashlight readily available in good working order, every crew member, every flight.
Crew interphone and the PA system, same threshold, 2 different boxes.
Both are required on airplanes with a seating capacity of more than 19 passengers. More than 19 means interphone for the crew, and a public address system for the cabin.
The cockpit door question always feels backwards, so let's nail it.
If there's a required emergency exit in the flight crew compartment, the door between that compartment and the cabin must be latched open during takeoff and landing. Open, so the exit stays usable.
Emergency lights next.
The emergency exit light system must be armed or turned on during taxi, takeoff, and landing. Taxi, takeoff, landing, not cruise.
And who can operate the interior emergency lights?
They must be operable manually from the flight crew station and from a point in the passenger compartment readily accessible to a normal flight attendant seat. Both ends of the airplane.
Escape slides.
Any automatically deploying escape slide system must be armed during taxi, takeoff, and landing. Same three phases as the lights. If it deploys on its own, it's armed for taxi, takeoffs, and landings.
Training rhythm. How often do crew members actually operate the emergency equipment?
Emergency drills happen during initial training and then once every 24 calendar months of recurrent training. 2-year rhythm on the drills.
And the altitude physiology class?
Crew members serving above 25,000 feet get instruction in respiration, hypoxia, and decompression. That knowledge requirement pairs with pressurized flying.
Now the survival gear, and the theme is where you fly, decides what you carry.
Flying over uninhabited terrain, flag, supplemental, or commercial operator, you carry three things. Suitable pyrotechnic signaling devices, a survival type ELT, and enough appropriately equipped survival kits for the number of occupants.
Signals to be seen, a beacon to be found, kits to stay alive. How many kits exactly?
One for each occupant of the airplane, not one per passenger seat, one per occupant on board.
Overwater now. Extended overwater operations.
Every occupant gets a life preserver equipped with an approved survivor locator light. Every occupant, and the light is part of the answer.
Life rafts?
Enough rafts, each with an approved survivor locator light, to hold everybody on the airplane, and the rafts carry appropriately equipped survival kits attached to them.
Plus a self-buoyant, water-resistant, portable emergency locator transmitter for the rafts.
And where do the life preservers live? Within easy reach of each seated occupant. If you're seated, your preserver is within arm's reach.
A flight from New York to London is the classic example. Flag carrier, extended over water, so preservers with locator lights, rafts with kits, and the portable ELT.
That's round 4. Take a breath, sip your coffee. Oxygen is next, and oxygen is pure numbers.
Round 5. Oxygen. 2 families of rules, reciprocating airplanes and turbine airplanes, then the crew mask rules.
Recip first, the old piston fleet. Cabin altitude above 12,000 feet, enough oxygen for 30 minutes for 10% of the passengers. That's the odd little recip number the book quizzes.
Turbine now, your world.
Turbine powered, pressurized, flying above 15,000 feet cabin pressure altitude, oxygen for each passenger, for the entire flight at those altitudes. Everybody, the whole time above 15.
And above what cabin altitude must oxygen be provided to all passengers, period?
15,000 feet, same number doing double duty. Below that, it scales down to percentages, above it, everyone.
First aid oxygen.
At least 2 acceptable dispensing units for first aid treatment of passengers for flights above 25,000 feet. Minimum of 2, never less.
Crew masks, the 5-second rule.
Flight crew members need a quick donning mask they can place on the face, sealed, secured, and supplying oxygen within 5 seconds using one hand. 5 seconds, one hand.
The FL-250 briefing.
Before flight above flight level 250, a crew member briefs the passengers on the necessity of using oxygen if the cabin depressurizes and points out the location and demonstrates the oxygen equipment. Briefing happens before you climb up there.
And above flight level 250, the flight deck crew must have that quick don mask at the ready.
Now the FL-410 rules, the 2 pilot dance. Above flight level 410, one pilot must wear their mask at all times.
If one pilot leaves the duty station up there,
the remaining pilot at the controls puts on and uses the oxygen mask until the other pilot returns. One stays masked, always, above 410.
And what's the highest flight level where you can fly without the pilot at the controls wearing a mask while the other pilot is away from the station?
Flight level 410 is the ceiling for that arrangement. Above it, mask on, no exceptions.
If the airplane has no quick donning masks at all,
then the maximum authorized altitude without one pilot wearing an oxygen mask is flight level 250. No quick don, you stay at or below 250, or somebody wears the mask.
Crew oxygen supply.
the certificate holder supplies enough oxygen for each flight deck crew member on flight deck duty, and it's not less than a 2-hour supply at the prescribed rate of descent profile. The 2-hour floor is the answer they want.
Round 6. People and cargo, seatbelts, prisoners, guns and bags, and boxes in the cabin.
Seatbelt sign goes off after takeoff. What's the announcement? Passengers should keep their seatbelts fastened while seated, even when the sign is off. That exact idea.
Lounge seats.
2 people may share 1 approved seatbelt in a lounge seat, but only during en route flight. Never for takeoff and landing. Berths are the same idea, en route only.
Who can the pilot in command throw off the flight deck?
Anyone. The PIC has emergency authority to exclude any and all persons from the flight deck in the interest of safety. Interest of safety is the magic phrase.
Cargo in the passenger compartment. When is that legal?
When it's carried aft of a bulkhead or divider, restrained to required load factors, secured by a safety belt, or approved tie-down strong enough to stop it shifting under flight and ground loads. Behind a divider, tied down, strong enough.
And a cargo bin in the cabin?
The bin can't block access to, or use of, any required emergency exit, or of the aisle. It also must withstand the load factors, using 1.15 times the combined weight of the bin and the maximum cargo weight, and it's fully enclosed and flame-resistant.
1.15, 15% margin on the bin math.
All cargo airplane, someone wants to ride along. The pilot in command may authorize a person to be admitted to the crew compartment. PIC authority again.
Now security, a prisoner in custody of law enforcement.
Escorted prisoners board before all other passengers and deplane after all other passengers. First on, last off, with their escort.
How many high-risk prisoners per flight?
No more than 1 passenger notified as maximum risk, and that person gets at least 2 armed law enforcement escorts. 1 max risk prisoner, 2 escorts minimum. And nobody in custody gets served beverages, and they sit between the escort and the window, not on the aisle.
Armed person authorized to fly armed, when does the carrier need the heads up?
If a person authorized to carry a deadly weapon is going to board, the air carrier gets notified a minimum of 1 hour before loading that flight. 1 hour minimum, except in an emergency.
Firearm in checked baggage.
Unloaded, in locked baggage, carried in an area inaccessible to the passenger, and only the passenger keeps the key or combination. Locked, unreachable, passenger holds the key.
Sterile flight deck. Define it.
Crew members refrain from non-essential activities during critical phases of flight. Critical phases are taxi, takeoff, landing, and everything below 10,000 feet except crews.
So when may non-essential communication happen below 10,000 feet?
Only during cruise flight. Level cruise below 10,000 is the single exception. Climbing out at 9,000? Sterile. Quiet.
Round 7. Fuel. Last big round, and it's a ladder. Climb it from home to far away.
Rung 1. Domestic operations. The 45-minute rule. A domestic flight needs fuel to the destination, then to the most distant alternate where one's required, and then 45 more minutes at normal cruising fuel consumption.
Destination, alternate, 45. That's also the reserve answer for a recipe commercial flight inside the 48 states. 45 minutes on top.
Flag flights landing inside the contiguous states follow the same recipe. So a flag turbojet, after the most distant alternate, still plans 45 minutes at normal cruising consumption.
Rung 2. The island rule.
Flag flight to an island destination, turbojet, and no alternate is available. Then the airplane must carry enough fuel to fly to that destination, and thereafter at least 2 hours at normal cruising fuel consumption. 2-hour cushion over the island.
Same 2 hours shows up when a turbine engine flag airplane is released to an airport with no available alternate. 2 hours of cruise fuel is the required reserve.
And outside the 48 states, if an alternate is not required for a supplemental or commercial IFR flight, same shape, fly to the destination, then at least 2 more hours at normal cruising consumption.
Rung 3, no alternate, but the airplane is a reset or a turboprop, supplemental or commercial.
Then the cushion is 3 hours at normal cruising fuel consumption. Piston and turboprop, no alternate equals 3 hours. Jet, no alternate equals 2 hours. Slower airplanes, fatter cushion.
Rung 4. The prop flag rule, most distant alternate.
propeller-driven, including turboprop, flag airplane, planning the most distant alternate, fly there, then 30 minutes plus 15% of total flight time, or 90 minutes at normal cruising consumption, whichever is less.
30 plus 15%, or 90, whichever is less. That's the turboprop flag reserve answer.
Rung 5, turbine supplemental, outside the 48 states, with an alternate.
Fly to destination, then 10% of the total time to fly there, then to the alternate, and then 30 minutes at holding speed at 1,500 feet above the alternate standard temperature.
So when the question asks the reserve over the most distant alternate for that turbine supplemental flight outside the states, the answer is 30 minutes at holding speed, 1,500 feet, no wind.
Recipe supplemental inside the 48, most distant alternate?
45 minutes at normal cruising fuel consumption. Back to the domestic style cushion.
Let's fold the latter one more time, fast.
Domestic and inside the states, 45 minutes. Jet with no alternate, island or released without one, 2 hours. Recipe or turboprop with no alternate, 3 hours. Prop flag alternate, 30 plus 15% or 90, whichever is less. Turbojet supplemental abroad, 10% en route, plus a 30-minute hold at 1,500 feet.
Beautiful. Rapid fire recap, whole quiz, numbers only. I call it, you answer it.
Bidot, Huo often said.
Thick, Don Mask.
5 seconds, one hand.
Serious injury hospital time.
More than 48 hours, starting within 7 days.
Drunk passenger disturbance report.
5 days.
Deviation report, dispatcher declared.
10 days from the event, through the operations manager.
Deviation report, pilot declared.
10 days after returning to home base.
Accident report to the NTSB.
10 days. Incidents only if they ask.
Immediate notification incident.
Flight control system malfunction.
Near mid-air collision.
Immediately, radio or phone, nearest ATC or flight service.
Weapon on board notice.
1 hour before loading.
Prisoner boarding.
First on, last off. 1 max risk prisoner, 2 escorts.
Interphone and PA threshold.
More than 19 seats.
Phones, megaphones.
60 to 99 seats, 1 in the rear. 100 or more, 2, front and rear, capacity not passengers carried.
Extinguisher count driver.
Passenger seating accommodations.
Emergency lights and slides armed for.
Taxi, takeoff, and landing.
Cockpit door with an exit behind it.
Latched open for takeoff and landing.
Emergency drills.
Every 24 calendar months after initial.
Passenger oxygen, turbine, above 15,000 Kelvin.
Every passenger, entire flight.
Recipe above 12,000.
30 minutes for 10% of the passengers.
First 8 oxygen units.
Minimum 2, above 25,000.
Passenger oxygen briefing before.
Flight level 250.
1 pilot masked at all times above.
Flight level 410.
No quick don masks, ceiling.
Flight level 250.
Crew oxygen supply.
2 hours minimum.
Uninhabited terrain kit count.
1 survival kit per occupant, plus pyro signals and a survival ELT.
Overwater must-haves.
Preserver with locator light per occupant, rafts with kits and lights, portable ELT.
Cargo bin load factor.
1.15, combined weight, and never block an aisle or exit.
Sterile deck exception below 10,000.
Cruise flight only.
Domestic fuel.
Destination, alternate, 45 minutes.
Island jet, no alternate.
2 hours past the destination.
Reservoir, turboprop, no alternate.
3 hours.
Prop flag, most distant alternate.
30 minutes plus 15% or 90, whichever is less.
Turbojet supplemental abroad, over the alternate.
30 minutes holding 1,500 feet.
FOQA in 3 words.
Aggregate error trends.
ASRS protection.
Confidential and de-identified, except accidents and crimes.
Bird strike form.
FAA 5200-7.
That's the whole chapter, Gary. You just heard every rule your quiz can throw at you.
Walk in there like a dispatcher. Read each question slow, find the rule hiding inside it, and the right answer picks itself.
You put in a full class week and you're still grinding on the drive-in. That's exactly how people pass this exam.
Go get your points. We'll have tonight's class notes ready for you when you get home.
This is Harmony.
And Kendrick. Good luck on the quiz, Gary. You've got this.